Do you want to talk about books?
Yeah.
Hello, and welcome to A Well-Read Life. This is a place to share stories about good books and the reading life. I'm your host, Beth Jamison. Join me as I meander through my reading journey and discover the books that make up a well-read life. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Katie Marquette to the podcast. Katie is a writer, podcaster, and audio editor living in the Maryland countryside with her husband, toddler, and many animals. She has an educational background in theology, English literature, and conflict resolution. When not chasing around her increasingly active daughter, she works on audio editing for public radio, runs a podcast and blog called Born of Wonder, and enjoys reading and riding horses. Katie's podcast is one of my personal favorites, and I had such a wonderful time sitting down and talking about motherhood and reading with her. I hope you enjoy our conversation as well. Katie, thanks so much for being here today. I found that there was a shift in my reading post-motherhood. So many novels had more meaning, were more poignant as I read them. And besides making my reading life richer, I feel as though I connected to certain books on a deeper level, even if they weren't specifically about motherhood. Has this been the case for you? And also, why do you think motherhood has brought about such a profound change in your reading?
Well, thank you so much, Beth, for having me on the podcast. I'm a big fan, and I loved having you on my podcast. So fun that we get to do this again. Yes, I absolutely agree. Motherhood changed a lot for me. I think that one of the big things is that sort of capital M motherhood was always sort of like an archetype to me, very abstract. And a lot of women mothers in literature are sort of archetypal. We don't necessarily get to see sort of the complexity of their lives, although I love the books even more now that do show that. I think that has made me appreciate that. So I have less, obviously, of an abstraction now. I'm living it. And I also have less of a sentimental view. I think of motherhood as much more sort of raw and powerful vocation, blood, sweat, and tears, not just sort of, dancing around the kitchen. And I mean, I think a lot of people, like when I was pregnant, I was like, oh, I'll have so much time when like the little one's like doing something, and I'll just have like, I don't know, like classical music playing in the background as I like bake something. And that has never happened. So I think that I just appreciate stories that get into the rawness of real life a little more, but also like the beautiful aspects of that, that they are beautiful. And then also like from a sort of religious perspective, I think thinking of God, the Father, and the parental role, again, not as an abstraction, and what that kind of love and like mercy and forgiveness and like what you would do for your kids has really been profound for me on like a spiritual level as well.
Absolutely. I was laughing as you were, I muted myself. So for those who are listening, I was laughing when you were saying all that about the classical music playing. And I had that, like that vision in my mind because my mom did that. She's an artist. And so she's kind of like, oh yeah, she's just so creative. And she always invited us in. And so we have things like that, but my dear little Love wild that. Child is just something else. I mean, she will listen to those kind of things, but I wasn't prepared. And I, like you, I had this like idealized kind of sentimentalized view of it slightly, but it is, I mean, it's, I am drawn to those books, like you said, that are, mm-hmm. that are more realistic, and definitely the sacrificial love, because I had no idea what that was like until I had my daughter, where I've told my husband, mm-hmm. it's like, you leave your job. I never can leave my job. I'm always on. If there is an emergency, I have to drop everything. And I was just like thinking about that today as I, struggled to find time for the podcast and reading and everything. And like, I'm such an introvert, and all I want to do is just cuddle up with a book. And I'm like, nobody talk to me, please. Just let me read. Just let me be by myself. And I realized that's just not practical at this time of my life. It's like, I'm going to have to bring the book along with me. My daughter's going to crawl all over me. I am going to have a little bear playing in the background. And that's just what it's going to be. But it's just, it has been such, it is becoming a heart change for me. So just like you said, I just appreciate those books that show that. And just the way that it can, as you said, the religious aspect, it shows the character of God. And we just see that picture of his love for us and his care and his patience, because that reminds me of how he loves me. And it helps me to love my daughter and aspire to parenting her in that way, especially patience right now, because it has, Katie, it's been a week. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel you. But it's a big responsibility, but it is something I do keep in mind as well. And it's some quote, I mean, it's sort of a generic quote, but it's so true, is that like your children's first image of God is their parents. And I mean, there's a reason sort of psychologically, especially when we're young, how we picture God, I think, ends up being reflecting how we were raised. So that's going to be a big impact on her. And I try to be very aware of that. Of course, we're human. And I think that's also important to teach them. And there are teachable moments to just say, mom's a human being and that's life. But I do think that just sort of finding the joy in the chaos and in the margins of life a little more. I do think before, when I had so much time, it's actually amazing how little I got done.
Exactly.
Looking back with how much time I had. So I actually, like, I'm proud of myself for what I do get done now, even if, you know, maybe I'd be like, oh, I wish I could do X, Y, Z, but because I do just have those margins and not sort of a looming blank page, it's actually easier to focus in some ways, because I know I have maybe 2 hours in the evening or something, and I should use that time well. So,
exactly. And before you fall asleep.
Yeah. Which is, you know, sometimes that's all that happens. So, you know, but
right,
sleep is important.
Exactly.
Too.
Right. And also, I forgot to mention this earlier, is I love books where the mother invites the children into their world and their creativity and what they're doing. I just had that modeled by my own mom, and it's still something I'm working on with my little girl, because it's hard to figure out how do I invite her into this world. And I know we've talked about this before, but I mean, she comes down here and she bangs on the keyboard, or she might try to sing into the microphone and things like that. But it's just, it is fun. It's fun to share those books with her. And that's, I'm trying to share that love of reading as well. And so I do very much value when that is included in books, that the mother shares her creativity with her children and her work with her children.
Yeah. I mean, kids are a part of life, not something to be,
right.
you know, we have a very culture that's like, you know, adult time, mm-hmm. kids table, like, you know, everything is separate. And I really admire cultures that are just sort of like, yep, it's a little messy and loud, but like, kids are part of life and we welcome them on in. And I think that at the end of the day, they have a much richer experience. And I'm trying, even, you know, I'm like you, I definitely love and value my time alone and my time to read and things like that. But just sort of as a family culture, I definitely want to sort of have that more open arms approach.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I agree. Katie, we both recently read Kristen Lovren's Daughter. I was on your podcast. And when I was on your podcast, it was mutual that our view of the book has changed since becoming mothers. Are there any other rereads post-motherhood that have surprised you with new insight or poignancy?
So yes, Kristen Lovren's Daughter was definitely the most profound. And I think now when I think of that book, I think sort of motherhood as the central story to me. You know, I know there are many stories sort of weaved in that book, but I think of Kristen's sort of arc of her life and the redemption of her life is sort of found in her mother's heart. But I was sort of looking through my Goodreads to see if I had reread anything else. And the only thing I've reread since I became a mom was The Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis, which, if you're not, for people who don't know that book, it's sort of a humorous, but with some serious theology behind it, of letters between demons, which sounds sort of bizarre, but it's funny. And it's a senior demon to a lesser demon, sort of explaining how to claim someone's soul. And it's through all these ways that are very subtle. And I think anybody who reads it will recognize themselves in these subtle ways that we can be sort of lured off track. So I couldn't think of anything exactly specific, but I do remember rereading it. It was my first book of 2022. And it was just, you know, motherhood can bring out, it's brought out things that, you know, I'm happy to discover about myself, but also things that are challenging. And I think that our kids probably are given to us specifically for a specific reason. And there are certain absolute joys from my daughter that are very specific to our life, but there are challenges too. You know, I mean, she's a big personality. I'm a big person. It's like, you know, I see the challenging parts of myself coming out in her a little bit too. And I think that just being aware of those sort of subtle ways we can start to question ourselves, or, you know, start nagging about something or start resenting something. And C.S. Lewis really gets to the heart of those things really well in that book.
Okay, so confession, I have never read all of the Screwtape Letters. And my husband, that is to his like horror that I haven't. But I have, like, I read some of it, but I do like what you said when you were talking about that. It just, it reminded me of just how much we see ourselves and our children. They're like a mirror for our sin. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
they absolutely can.
So
be,
all my flaws, I just have to watch myself. Cause I realize I'm like, and it's not like, I mean, like you said, we apologize. We talk to our kids. We're like, we're not going to try to be perfect for them, but she does. It is so funny. It's just like, okay, so this is something I need God to work on in my heart. She's just shown that to me.
Yeah.
But it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they're such imitators, you know, in like literal ways. I mean, JoJo's like 15 months now, so she's like in a very imitative stage. I mean, you know, if you pick up something, she wants to pick it up. If you say something, she's trying to say it. And I can just see how this keeps going through life, you know. So my husband and I are always talking about, you know, she's watching us. So we just, I mean, I think it's great because when you don't have kids, you like, I don't know, you don't have that little person who's like the devil or angel on your shoulder, you know, like who's watching you all the time. So I think that the Screwtape Letters definitely sort of reminded me of those things.
Exactly. And I'm trying to think for my rereads, I asked you this and it's like, what were my rereads that really surprised me? And I know that like we've talked about Kristen Loughran's Daughter is top at the list, but I know also like the books that I read as a child. So I'm going back and reading a lot of the books I read that I loved in childhood. And they have taken on a new meaning. It's like I'm reliving my childhood, but I'm also seeing it from the perspective of a mother. So it's been very, very interesting. And I know Anne of Green Gables, and we'll talk about, I'll mention that in a little bit, but that was one of the books that was like, it just became, I've always loved it, but it became a completely different story to me once I had my daughter. So yeah, I think I've been surprised, but the books from childhood have just been really the ones that have gotten me the most.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I mean, because I think, I'm sure I'm going to keep discovering this as I start to read more of those kind of books again, is, you know, we're used to being sort of the young person in the story, right? Sort of the child, the heroine or hero or something. And now we're the mom, and that's a very different role and a different perspective. And it's very eye-opening.
Mm-hmm. It's just so interesting to see those different stages in your life. It's like you are living all of those stages at once. It's been good. It's been, you know, like I said, interesting. I keep saying that, but it is just this, I don't know, it's kind of like an out-of-body experience in some ways, but it's really nice. I've enjoyed it. I'm enjoying the different stages.
Definitely.
In the Victorian era, there was a cult of motherhood, sort of this unrealistic depiction of mothers and women, in my opinion. There are, of course, exceptions to this, but I find so much more depth to the stories I've read recently. You've said the same thing, that don't idealize motherhood, but give a true depiction of it without sacrificing the tenderness and bond between mother and child. Is there a book or books that you find yourself going back to for its depiction of motherhood? And what is it about these books that are like a siren call for you?
So I think this is sort of interesting. Well, my answer to a few of your questions is Little Women, because this is a favorite book of mine, obviously. Daughter's Name, Josephine. Joe March is like my hero. So, I mean, this book has meant a lot to me. But I think, you know, we think of Marmee. Maybe she's like a little cliched, a little too perfect. But I also really admire her because I sort of think of this like wild, creative March family household. And she was like off helping the neighbors and like just sort of this bustling, like caring bundle of energy that I don't know if I could ever really be, but I do really admire. And there are some really beautiful, tender scenes between her and the girls, the different girls at different points. And I think of, you know, when she tells Joe that, you know, she's had her rage problems, like she has a bit of a temper, like, you know, it might surprise her. And I always thought of that as a way that like we as mothers, you know, we do have our own challenges, but we put on a brave face for our kids and we sort of work on those things. And that's like a beautiful thing. And, you know, Joe's so surprised because to her mother is this sort of always has it together. So we sort of get a little glimpse of who she is sort of as a woman and the challenges that must have been for her raising these four girls. And there's also a wonderful scene with Amy, you know, when she's Amy's been sent away because there's fever in the house, and she discovers this chapel. So she creates a little chapel for herself. The maid who's Catholic gives her a rosary, and they sit down, and there's an image of Madonna and Child that she's looking at. And her mother, she shows her mother, she's like worried, you know, because they're like good Protestants, you know, what, or is she going to be ashamed? And her mother isn't at all, and sits down with her and sort of has her on her lap, and they're looking at the image of Mary and Jesus. And you just sort of see this, you're given this parallel of like Marmee holding Amy, and they're like looking at another mother and child. And it's just like a beautiful scene. And she just talks to her about, you know, finding God's love, and this is a beautiful thing she's been doing, praying for her sister, and, you know, and Amy, who's such a selfish person. So this was like a big character moment for her. So I love a lot of the moments with Marmee. So that one for sure. And then just one other one was this is the story of the Trapp family singers, which is Maria von Trapp's autobiography. It's amazing. I love it so much. It is like just a beautiful depiction of family life. She was quite a personality. A lot of similarities to The Sound of Music that we know and love, but also you learn a lot more too. And there's so much just sort of boisterous like love of family in this book. And it just, again, it's aspirational for sure. I don't know how she had this kind of energy with all those children, but I love it and I love hearing about it. And yeah, so those would be two that stuck out for me.
I was wondering if you were going to say Little Women, and I'm so glad you said the Von Trapp family singers, because, okay, number one, Sound of Music is one of my all-time favorite movies, and Captain Von Trapp was my very first crush.
Oh, yeah.
Like the Christopher Plummer. Yeah. Oh, he's so wonderful. But I found a copy recently at a used bookstore, and I bought it I was at a book club last night, and that's one of the books they're talking about doing. So I am excited to read that.
Oh, you'll love it.
I got that. And then she has another book. It's like The Seasons of the Year or something. I can't remember, but.
Right. I think and included sort of in this, in her story, is they do a lot of sort of seasonal liturgical living. So, I mean, you'll hear about sort of their Advent traditions, their Lent traditions. And I actually did an episode on my podcast once about the Advent traditions they do, because just that chapter alone is like, I want to read it every Christmas, because it's a wonderful, beautiful story, and includes all these wild Austrian, you know, family traditions. And like, you know, St. Nicholas shows up with the Krampus,
yes,
which is this crazy sort of devil-like figure who's going to take away any bad children. And it's just sort of a wild, rollicking story, but ends in sort of this beautiful moment with her in the church. This is when she's still the nanny too, and she's sort of realizing that she's like falling in love with the captain that Christmas night. So it's very romantic and beautiful. So I think you'll love it. And it's definitely a beautiful depiction of family life and motherhood as well.
Oh, I cannot wait. Oh, I'm so excited. That just makes me want to go pull it off the shelf, like right after we get through. So some of the books that that I go back to for their depiction of motherhood, like we keep mentioning Kristen Lovren's daughter, but I'm going to talk about it always. But Hannah Coulter is another one. Have you read that, Katie?
I have not. Is that Wendell Berry? Yeah. I mean, I love Wendell Berry's essays. I have not dove into his fiction, but I have heard about
it. It's so good. I read it probably my daughter was like 4 months old, I think, when I read it. But it was, so there's grief in it, but there's this beautiful, like, there's a comfort after her first daughter is born in the midst of her grief. And my story is completely different from Hannah Coulter's in what she experienced. But we battled with infertility. We didn't know we were ever going to have kids. And so as I read it, and when she's first becoming a mother, that was just like, it was a healing for me. And also it was like, I felt like, okay, someone else understands. They'd understand what this, and it's written by a man. But they understand.
Wendell Berry's
so
amazing.
But it's just like through her, he understands what this is like to become a mother. And there's a long quote. I'm not going to read it for the sake of time, but if you have a copy of Hannah Coulter, it's page 54 through 55. And it's just this beautiful depiction of motherhood. And she's talking about taking her daughter at night and nursing her, and just this sweet, just that moment that they have together of this just falling asleep together and waking in the morning. But there's this beautiful quote that is very short, so I can read it, but she says about her daughter, "She was a happiness that made me cry." And I just feel like, I'm like, that's so true. That's how I felt. Like I had it underlined when I first read it, because that's how my daughter was. This was just this unexpected joy in our life. And that was just like my heart in that. And then also The Awakening of Miss Prim. That was a reread for me after I had my daughter, but it was like, I don't know. Have you read that, Katie?
No, I haven't. No.
Oh, you must. Okay. You will love it.
My
you
list
will love
is
it.
Getting longer and longer every time I talk to you. So
it's a really short. It's like, it's kind of like a fairy tale, but it's this whole town. And I think Spain. And this woman becomes this librarian of this very eccentric scholar. And he has he is the guardian of his nieces and nephews. And they have, like, the whole town educates the children. And it's this really beautiful, like, classical education. And I read that book now and I'm like, I just want
this
move
for
my daughter. I know. This. I know. I'm like, I need this. And it's like, it is amazing. So there's that one. And then Anne of Green Gables, of course, I've mentioned earlier. But it was when I reread it, it was the depiction of adoption and Marilla's transformation. This was like when I read it this time, it's one of those things where it's a different stage of my life. And it was Marilla's story that captured me.
That's beautiful. I love Marilla and Anne's relationship so much. And that is so beautiful. I can see how the experience that you've had, that would just hit on such a deep level.
It does. It does. It's just, I mean, I don't think as a child I understood Marilla. And of course, you just think of her as this really rigid person. But just the way that she is able to, Anne breaks through in her life and she is able to love and just take this super practical woman is able to love this just winsome child. And it's just a beautiful story.
And she becomes like Anne's defender too in the town.
Right?
You know what I mean? She's always the one to sort of point out that Anne's actually right or has a good point or something like that. And and of course we all love Matthew, but I mean, Marilla is like, she's, you know, like got that edge to her. But then like when you dig deep, she has such a beautiful heart that Anne especially brings out. So beautiful.
And Colleen Dewhurst in the original Anne, the only one I will watch.
Of course.
She is just amazing.
So
she's
good,
amazing. Yeah. And then lastly is In This House of Breed. Have you read that one?
I am reading it right now.
Right are you?
Yes.
Oh, Katie. Oh, you are in for such a treat.
Yeah. I'm about a quarter in. Yeah.
Okay. I want to warn you, there is a very intense scene at the end.
Okay.
Involving children.
Okay.
Forewarned. Just forewarned.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah. But it's like Catherine. I don't know if you've gotten to Catherine, have you?
Yes.
Okay. I just love her.
Yeah. Yeah. She's lovely.
I almost, I thought of like, oh, we could name our daughter Catherine.
Yes, Catherine. Yeah, absolutely. No. Yeah.
And then I love Philippa and her relationship with Penny, her secretary. And I've done an episode on In This House of Breed, but it is a story of a woman who becomes a nun later in like middle age. She leaves all of her high-ranking business position to become a nun. And it's just a beautiful story. Absolutely amazing. And
when I saw that you, you know, in your notes were going to talk about this, it's interesting because when I picked it up, actually, like the first in the prologue, the first paragraph, it's short. So I'll read it really quickly.
Oh, please do.
It's, you know, talking about religious life. But when I read it, I immediately said, this is motherhood. This is parenthood. So it goes, the motto was Pax, but the word was set in a circle of thorns. Pax, peace. But what a strange peace, made of unremitting toil and effort, seldom with a seen result, subject to constant interruptions, unexpected demands, short sleep at nights, little comfort, sometimes scant food, beset with disappointments and usually misunderstood, yet peace all the same, undeviating, filled with joy and gratitude and love. It is my own peace I give unto you, not notice the world's peace.
Katie, I love that. It so is when I read so that, much. Yeah.
Sleepless nights. You know,
oh, no.
Who knew? We had so much in common with these Benedictine nuns. But
I know.
I thought that was just a beautiful depiction. And this book just found me at the right time because my priest is actually leaving to become like a monk, a cloistered monk, like a Carmelite monk. And, you know, it's a beautiful vocation, but I'm going to miss him a lot.
Yeah.
And he's a good friend of ours. He actually was the one who sort of saw us into the church. And so this book has sort of helped me sort of immerse myself in the beauty of that vocation. So motherhood and just sort of the beauty of everybody's vocation. Motherhood is a vocation, you know, the monastic life is a vocation, just that we're sort of all called to challenging but beautiful roles in life.
Mm-hmm. And that's like the thing that I got out of the most from In This House of Breed is its depiction of vocation. It is just amazing. It's so good. When you were talking about your priest, have you read the book, The Life You Save May Be Your Own? It's something like An American Pilgrimage by Paul Ely. Have you read that? Have you heard of this?
No.
Oh, okay. So it's a biography of Flannery O'Connor, Thomas Merton, Dorothy Day, and Walker Percy.
Wow.
And, yeah. It's amazing.
Hitting dang. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah,
wow.
So good. And I haven't finished it, but they talk like you have Thomas Merton and his discerning whether to go into become a monk. And it's very interesting. I think of In This House of Breed as I was reading it, but it's a good one. It's well worth reading. It's very, very interesting. I got a lot of books that I felt like I needed to read after reading it. So
right. Okay. Yeah.
It's a good one.
If you put that in the show notes and also email it to me.
Yes.
I would love to.
Yes.
That
absolutely.
Sounds great. But it's amazing. Like, you know, you wouldn't think, okay, here are some cloistered nuns, right? And you wouldn't think, well, this book will teach me about motherhood. But that's sort of what we're talking about with all this is that sort of this new lens brings sort of a different deeper meaning to sort of everything that I would immediately read those lines and not just think of a religious vocation, but think of the vocation of motherhood.
Exactly. There's this line in This House of Breed, I'm going to butcher it, but someone is asking Philippa, doesn't she regret everything that she had to give up? And she says something like that what she had to give up was like her cat, her clock, and some dear little sins. It's something like that. But I
remember
just love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I just love that. It just sticks with me because sometimes I'll just say that. I'll just say that to myself and as I'm doing dishes. So I love that.
Yeah, because sort of the things you do give up are. I mean, it's not like it's a not an exhaustive list. Like it is, but it's so that like the fact that there's sort of this existential peace though that's underneath everything that I think the vocation of motherhood, especially when it's supported and understood as sort of how important it is, which I think is why it's so important to talk about. Just this is such a vital job that we have, when you sort of understand that it there's just sort of a deep peace, even if all you did that day was change diapers and run around after a toddler and make some meal that they ate one bite of and then collapsed on the couch. Like that's a beautiful day. You know, I mean, that's an important day. So.
Exactly. I've been reading the Clarkson, Clay and Sally Clarkson's book, The Life-Giving Parent. And that has been so good for me because he talks about how we have been given these children by God to form their little characters, to know him and be ready for him. I mean, I'm totally paraphrasing and butchering that, but that was, for me, that was just this view of this little life. I have been given charge of this very precious and little life. And that is a very important task. And it has just been a good reminder for me of what an honor that work is. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, switching gears a bit. Like me, you may not have as much time to read now that your daughter is entering toddlerhood. I remember having so much time to read when my daughter was an infant and napped all the time. How do you find time to read? How do you prioritize what to read? And for that matter, how much of a priority is reading to you right now?
Yeah,
it's a lot, Katie.
Yeah, okay. Let's go through here.
Need a first question again. Okay. How do you find time to read?
Okay, so, well, it depends. And this sort of goes into the last part, which is that I don't really beat myself up if I'm not in sort of a reading phase. You know, if we're just going through a sleep regression or, you know, like all the month of May, my husband and I were sick and trying to take care of the baby. And like, you know, it's just like, you've got to pick your battles. And sometimes it's more important to just collapse when you can and watch some TV or something. So I don't really beat myself up on those times that I do, but I do try to sort of take advantage of when I do have the energy at the end of the day, even if it's just 20 minutes, like while dinner's cooking or 20 minutes before bed or something, just because sort of, as I was saying earlier, I do know I have such a limited amount of time and I feel a little bit of pressure to use it. So yeah, I read in the evening. You know, once she's in bed, I read before bed. The other thing that can be a little challenging is that, you know, my husband and I also want to spend time together in the evening after she's in bed. So we've started, we read aloud to each other sometimes, like we're reading the Odyssey right now. You know, and sometimes we don't feel like it, you know, you don't always feel like reading the Odyssey, but you know, that's something that way we're discussing and we're together. We read a really good book called The Genesis of Gender by Abigail Favalli. It's a challenging book. It's like sort of, but if you would like to, she's an amazing writer. It's called A Christian Theory. She has a beautiful chapter on Genesis and then sort of goes into sort of a lot of the cultural things going on today and how we should approach them. But that was a great book to read out loud because we could pause and discuss it. And so we're sort of always keeping an eye out for things that we could read together. So that's one way. Yes, when my daughter was younger, I had a lot of audiobooks on or podcasts. I did also watch like Downton Abbey a lot and Call the Midwife and things like that because we had a rough start to breastfeeding. So I was pumping and then feeding her. And then, you know, like, where was I going to sleep? There was like no time. So I remember trying to memorize the poem, The Highwayman, because just to like give myself something to do while I was pumping or something. And you have to get creative. So to sum up, I find the time. I definitely read less. I'm sure if you just sort of objectively looked at the, you know, time I spend reading, it's less. But I think that in a way it's richer sort of for all the reasons we've been discussing. And because I'm sort of discerning about what I read in that time. I definitely, if I'm not feeling it, I kind of let it go because I don't have sort of this compulsion to simply finish it. I only have so much time.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you about all of those things. I love that y'all read aloud together. I think that is just, that's so romantic. I just want my husband and I to read it aloud together. I mean, we had a reading group for a little while where we had friends come over and we would all take turns reading aloud. And that was great fun. We loved doing that.
That's really fun.
Yeah. It's just that right now we're not able to. We all read together as a family at night. That's one of my favorite times. Like as our family time, we did it with my little girl was just really, really little. And we went through the book. Oh, what is it called? The Lost Spells, I think. But I can put it in the show notes. But it's this beautiful book of poetry, just lovely. Mm. And my husband and I would alternate reading them to my little girl. And we had our favorite poems. And we would always like kind of healthy teasing of, I read this better than you do, like back and forth. And so that was a lot of fun. But I'm gonna write down that the Genesis of Gender. Is that the name of
it? Yeah, Genesis of Gender by Abigail Favalli. She's a very interesting person too. She is a convert to Catholicism, and she taught, she sort of grew up, I think she was evangelical, but she ended up sort of being very secular and actually taught a lot of modern feminist theory, and then had a radical sort of, she wrote another book called Into the Deep, which is about her conversion and a lot of the changes of heart she had around womanhood. But she's so smart because she understands why certain people have certain views, you know, and she talks about them respectfully because she understands why you would come to those conclusions. And I think that a lot of times we're just like, well, they're crazy, you know. And as a convert, I just really appreciate that because I've held many different views over my life. And I know that people sort of have goodwill. They're just confused about some things. And she's so logical and, but also so attentive to sort of the beauty of God's creation, and writes about it so sort of encouragingly and beautifully. And it's very, very affirming to read as a woman. So I would definitely recommend that. It's a more serious read, but it's very readable. It's not like, you know, heavy academic writing or something. She's a very lively writer.
Oh, I'm so excited. I have a couple of friends that I'm thinking of right now that I'm going to recommend this to because I know that they will love this. Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Thank you for that.
I would just one more note on that is I would recommend, I think you can get it on Amazon, but it's actually faster and I think better to just go to the press, just Ignatius Press. We'll get it to you pretty fast.
So. Oh, that's awesome. That's good to know. Okay. I'll put that in the show notes. Okay. How do you prioritize? You kind of touched on this, but how do you prioritize what to read? Like, as far as like your reading list, what are the books, like you have that little bit of time, and what are the books that are going to grab you that you're like, this is what I need to be reading at this time?
I think it's just, I don't really have like a criteria. It's just sort of like, I'm not really hard on myself if I'm just not, you know, there are times when I'm just not into reading fiction. Like it's just not sitting with me. I can't concentrate on the story. I want to read some essays or something like that. So I just sort of just follow my intuition. And most of the time, I'm sort of led to the right books, I think, at the right time. That's usually been the case. But yeah, I mean, I just follow my interests and, but I do sort of, as I said, if I start a book, you know, even if it's highly recommended, you know, a friend of mine once told me, she like gave me a pile of books and she's like, don't feel pressure to read this soon or even in year. She's like, you'll read it when you're supposed to read it. And that's sort of just how I feel about books. So that's what I think about it.
There's this great, I don't know if you've read the book, Book Girl by Sarah Clarkson.
I've read about a quarter of it, but I love that whole family. They are wonderful.
But she has something like that happen. She takes, I think, it might be Hannah Coulter. It might be one of the Wendell Berry books off the shelf at a friend's house. And the friend, she was young, and the friend just put it back on the shelf and was like, you're not ready for this book yet.
Oh, but wow. I love that. Yeah, actually that friend is, it's so funny, all these religious, she's now a nun. So she was giving me a bunch of books as she was leaving to become a nun. But, you know, and they're like beautiful, amazing books, a lot of them, you know, so spiritual books or something. And so you're like, oh my gosh, I really should like break into these. And she's like, just, you know, when it's time, you know, you'll pick up. And that has been the case. That was a couple of years ago now. So
yeah, I completely agree with that. I feel like that just kind of puts into words how I've been feeling. It's like a very intuitive reading lately. Mm-hmm. I had a whole plan to do a whole feature on the podcast about a certain author. And I was doing the research for it. I was all excited about it. And it just wasn't, and it's an author I love. And it just was not clicking. It was supposed to be for June. And it just, I could not get into it. And I picked up The Yearling, which is what I'm featuring now, and was reading it while we were in our cabin in May. And it was, and this has been in the back of my mind to read it for over a year, well over a year. And it was just what I needed, because it was, I was able to be quiet and really see the story in a way I hadn't seen it before. And I know I wouldn't have if I had rushed into reading it, or if I hadn't picked it up when I did. So I'm like big proponent for that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I really struggle, like, as you know, I mean, I try to pre-plan my episodes, you know, for my podcast, and I've done that to a certain extent, but I'm such an intuitive sort of follow my lead of my interests. So I find it very hard to sort of pre-plan too much. I have all these grand ideas. Oh, I'm going to pre-record the whole season. And there is some pre-recording I have to do just to be practical. But like, I find that hard, because 1 week, I kind of just want to do what I'm currently interested in.
Right, Katie, me too. I understand that completely, because I've been like that, because I'm sitting here thinking, so what am I going to do after The Yearling? I don't know, because there's a couple of books I'm reading now. And it's like, do I stick to what I was going to do in June originally? I'm like, I'm still just not quite ready. And I'm so disappointed, because I have the priest at my daughter's school, the church that hosts it, and he's from a certain diaconate that the priest can be married, because he was, before
Anglican,
he converted,
before
he was married.
Yeah.
He was, yeah, Episcopalian. But at some point, I'm going to have him and his wife on to talk about this person. And I'm like, I really want to talk to them. I'm so excited about that conversation. But I'm just like, I just can't get myself to do the research. So I just, it's hard. It's like that, all those plans. It's just,
I just say, don't push yourself. I mean, you know,
that's what I mean.
That's the mother. It's just like, you know, I only have so much energy. I only have so much time. So it just is what it is.
Exactly. And you've talked about the priority of reading for you right now. So we'll just go on to the next question, which is, I am adamant, and if anyone has listened to this podcast knows this, that reading with your children creates a strong bond. And I experienced this in my own childhood. I've talked about it so many times. My mother was wonderful about reading out loud with us. Katie, are there any particular books or podcasts that have encouraged you to read with your daughter?
Well, we were talking about the Clarksons, and Sally Clarkson's podcast. Is it Sally Clarkson at Home? I think it's called, but it's, I turn that on probably almost every day. You know, she has such a huge backlog of episodes, but she is just like, you know, your like grandmother that you just, is just pure encouragement. And, you know, books and the arts were such a part of their family culture. And she absolutely saw it as part of, you know, of their Christian faith and everything. And I sort of follow their whole family, as I'm sure many people do.
Me too.
They're
me too.
All artistic, inspiring people. And so Sally's podcast, I turn on a lot. It's just, she's just very affirming. She does not shy away from, you know, the hardships of, you know, she had four kids and, you know, there were bumps along the way, and she had some challenging personalities in that group. And she just talks about what works and talks about how important it is to keep at it. And especially to introduce your kids to things that inspire wonder and like expose them to beauty and music and books. And she's, so that's my sort of go-to sort of just pump up mom podcast, I guess.
Absolutely. So I mentioned before Book Girl by Sarah Clarkson. I'm a huge Sarah Clarkson fan. And also her book Caught Up in a Story, which is one of her, she wrote it before she had gone to Oxford. And it's a lovely book. Absolutely lovely. I love the Read Aloud Handbook. And now I have this book, which I don't think it's in print anymore, but it's called The Quest of Wings. And I have been reading it. I don't know if you can you see it, Katie?
I can see it. Yep.
It is just the most delightful book. And it was, I think, first published in the mid-40s. So the war, World War II was still going on. But it's a mother writing about reading to her two children and how they made books such a priority. And it has just some humor in it. But I'm loving this book so much. I'm in the fifth chapter, which is about poetry. But she has a chapter for my book order, not order anything else in my life, but it's called Strictly Practical. And it talks about teaching your children how to appreciate books and how to care for them. Mm. And we have this constant battle with my daughter because she just tears up books, which like she has had that phase. And that just is just horror to me because I never did that ever. And so she has this whole section on how to repair books and how to teach the children how to repair books.
I love
and
it's that. Just love that. I need
delightful.
That.
Mm-hmm. It is delightful. So I'll have to see if there's like you can find used copies. But my mom found this at a used bookstore years ago. But the author has an inscription in this book. Like she wrote she dedicated this book to someone. Like it's
amazing.
Written there.
Yeah.
I know. So I'm like, I've never heard of her before, but it's just, if you can ever get it, I'll put it in the show notes for people to see if they can find used copies, but it's just the humor in it. I just love it. But it's like this, I think I said earlier, a precursor to Read Aloud revival, because I mean, it's just like, this is like the 1940s. Everything that Sarah McKenzie has said is just like pretty much in this book. So it's just, it's a delight. Absolute delight.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say, I think that having sort of just books as like, we just try to have books around. I mean, we just do naturally, but like just them as physical objects is like something of interest to her, you know, like we let her pull books off the shelf and just sometimes, I mean, she's so funny, you know, she'll pick up something and it'll be like Heidegger or something. And she'll be sitting there like flipping through it. We have like some really funny pictures of her, like with some, or she loves, like she brought, she was obsessed with, what was it? Oh yeah, it was a Wagner. It was like a translation of Wagner. She's walking around, waving it around. What?
Katie, that is hilarious.
So we kind of, within reason, until she sort of gets interested in maybe, you know, tearing it. But, you know, and I do try to, you know, let her see me, like, even if she's just playing on the ground with something, I'll try to have a book there, even if I can only read two sentences instead of picking up my phone. Just because I know, again, like we were talking about with the imitative things, I just want books to be a very sort of natural part of our lives, the physicality of them, that they're there, that if you have a spare moment, you pick it up, you know, that's just something we're trying to incorporate, which is luckily, I mean, that's kind of how we are. We're sort of book hoarders. So it is natural to us, but I'm excited for her to sort of become more and more a part of that.
Oh, yeah. I know that there was one of the books that I read about reading aloud to your children, that one of the best things that you can do is have books just around for them to pick up. Yeah. So you're doing a great job. Katie, when you found out you were having a daughter, was there a book that you couldn't wait to read with her?
What do you think it was? It's Little Women. Yes, of course. So I've sort of already talked about my love of Little Women, but I'm very, very excited to read this to her. And she's named for St. Joseph and for Joe March. So she's got Joe March is in her name, and I would love for her to get to know Joe and the March family. But I was also very excited to read the Betsy Tacy series by Maud Hart Lovelace.
I've never read them.
Oh, you would love them, Beth. They are so charming. They are, my grandmother read them all to me and my sister. So I have just like such sweet memories of them. And they're just this story of this family in sort of the early 20th century. And Betsy is kind of kind of Joe March, like in that she wants to be a writer and everything like that. But it's sort of her and her neighbor, Tacy, and they're just sort of adventures in the neighborhood. And it's just a beautiful depiction of a certain period of history. And just these really charming things happen, you know, where the girls will come up with some elaborate, you know, story that then like gets way out of, you know, proportion in the neighborhood and all these things. And so we loved them when we were kids, and I reread them when I was pregnant, and I'm just very excited to read them with Joe. I'm also excited to read Beatrix Potter. That was another one, you know, all of her books, you know, Peter, obviously, Squirrel Nutkin, Jemima Puddle Duck, all them was another sort of love of my grandmother's. So I'm very excited for that. She has a board book right now of Peter Rabbit that she does love. You know, she loves bunnies. So that's very exciting to her. So that, Narnia, love all the Narnia books. Can't wait to read those. And then all my sort of horse book obsessions from my young years, all the Marguerite Henrys, King of the Wind, Misty of Chincoteague, and then Anna Sewell, Black Beauty. So there's a lot I'm excited for. And I know my husband has his own list. So, I mean, between the two of us, we're going to be vying for, you know, who's doing the bedtime reading. So, but I'm so excited to read all of these with her.
Oh, I love those. I love those lists. I think that that's just so, she's going to be such a lucky little girl. So fortunate. We've just started reading the Beatrix Potter books to my daughter. And she, I'm trying to remember, she had like Peter Rabbit, and she was just kind of retelling the story to herself one day. She's just standing there just naked. So naked. Sure. Just reading it out loud.
And it was,
no, it was just so cute. But she does. She's just like, and Mr. McGregor, and like, she's just going on and like, don't do that. And so it's just, it's really sweet.
To a pie.
Yeah. No, it's just a sweet, it was just, it's been sweet to see her love those books. So I'm loving sharing that with her. And also, of course, Anne of Green Gables. When we were at the hospital with my daughter. So it was a very whirlwind. I don't share a lot about her story because I had to keep it private for her, but it was a very whirlwind event. And I didn't know we were going to have a little girl before that. And it just hit me in the hospital after I had been holding her that I was going to get to read Anne of Green Gables with her. And I texted one of my friends. I'm like, guess what, Heather? I get to read Anne of Green Gables with her.
I love that.
So yeah, that's just one of my the things that I look forward to the most with her. She's already listening to quite a few, even books I haven't read on Audible. Heidi is one of them that she will listen to sometimes at night. And I was supposed to read it a few years ago with my friend and never finished it. But listening to it, I'm like, I need to read this book because there, it just sounds like there's just a really sweet story behind it. Mm-hmm. So, or in it. So that's also on my list. But that's just been fun, just getting to discover these books. Like the books you have read, you get to share, but the books that you haven't read, getting to discover them. So it's great fun. All right, Katie, before we go, I like to ask a quick round of literary questions at the end for fun. And I'm very excited to hear what your answers are. Okay. So what is the best book you've read in the last year?
So it was actually, you know, man, we're bringing up the Clarksons a lot, but it was Sarah Clarkson's book, This Beautiful Truth, which is a beautiful, beautiful book. She goes, you know, very vulnerably about her struggles with anxiety and depression and OCD and some other things, and just sort of the redemption that she's found in beauty and in the arts and in wonder, and how God has sort of shed light on so many things in her life. And she's a beautiful writer, and there are so many recommendations in that book for other books and art and music, and it's just a very encouraging read. So that definitely, when I was looking through my Goodreads list of the past year, that was one that I would just definitely recommend. I mean, Kristen Lavrin's Daughter probably takes it's like the best, you know, reread.
Right.
But as far as a new book I read, that was definitely it.
Oh, yay. Okay. What is your favorite book of all time?
This was actually really hard. I mean, like Little Women is my favorite story, you know, in all its iterations. I love the book. I love both movies and everything. But I had a hard time with this, you know, because there are different books that meant different things to me at different times. So, I mean, I loved Jean Steinbeck's East of Eden.
Oh, I love that one.
That is a beautiful story. I think I've only read it once. My husband, that's like really one of his very favorites. He's read that a number of times. But when I think to sort of stories that have just like stayed with me, that is definitely one of them. I would probably put Kristen Lavrin's Daughter on the list
of
favorites for sure. And then there are sort of those childhood, like all the Narnia books, you know, are the Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, you know, there's never a time when I don't pick up that book and it's not like deeply, you know, comforting to me. I would say, you know, C.S. Lewis, Little Women, and then probably Kristen Lavrin's Daughter would be sort of the top three, with some heavy influence from things like John Steinbeck.
Yeah, I agree with all of those answers. And I love just hearing that. I also love the book, and it's going to be sound so weird that I'm going to say this is one of my favorite books. I mean, recently, I wouldn't say of all time. I love the book, The End of the Affair by Graham Greene.
Oh, that's
and
a great
it
book.
Is so odd for me to love that book so much, but I do. I can't. It's just, it will be one of the books I will have on the podcast at some point because I love it so much, but I'm like, I need some time to really do justice to it. I want to do that in Brideshead Revisited because those are such good.
Yeah, Brideshead is so good. Yeah.
Goodness gracious. They're so good. But that's one of mine. And I also love The Scent of Water by Elizabeth Googe.
I have not read that.
Elizabeth Googe books are so redemptive. That book especially is just so beautiful. We're talking about Sarah Clarkson earlier. That's one. And I found that book from her, and that's one book that she loves. And it's just, oh, goodness gracious. It's just such a treat. It's just a delight. So I recommend that one. But what is a book you haven't read but have always meant to read?
So there were two that came to mind that have just sort of been looming, you know, for a while is Middlemarch and Far From the Madding Crowd. So
to Far From the Madding Crowd, I love.
I've seen
so
the
much.
Movie. I saw the movie, was beautiful. I actually watched it like on a plane when I was flying to England. So it was like very like I was immersed and it was beautiful. But I've started Far From the Madding Crowd before. It's not that it's not engaging or well, it's just, you know, it's a type of book, you know, it's heavy. It's very descriptive. Yeah. And I have not frankly had the mental
the headspace,
energy yeah. to do that, yeah. But that is one. And Middlemarch has loomed for a long time, brought up in many, you know, podcast things I listen to, and it sounds like, you know, something I would love. It just has not had time for it yet.
They're an undertaking. I feel like you have to be really in the right mindset to sit down with a Victorian book. I feel like I have to learn how to read almost again is how I feel when I pick one of those up.
It's a different type of reading, for sure.
It really is. But in my book club, Far From the Madding Crowd was my pick for the year. So we're going to be reading that. So I'm excited, really excited about that. And I've read most of Middlemarch at the end of it, the last line. I'm sure all the things that you've listened to have mentioned, that last line is just amazing. It's worth the whole book.
Do you remember it?
Oh, I can't remember it. It's something about the hidden life. Do you remember?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Because I think it was the like in unvisited graves, like how
yes.
many? Yes. Mm-hmm. I know exactly because there's an amazing movie. I don't know if you've seen it called A Hidden Life. And it's not about Middlemarch, but that's sort of the inspiring quote. It's about a man named Blessed Franz Jagerstatter. He's on his way to sainthood and he refused to take the oath to Hitler. And it's a very sort of atmospheric movie, but if you just look up the soundtrack for Hidden Life, if you finish this podcast, make that the next thing you listen to. It's this violin. It's just, it's beautiful. And I would recommend that. So just total aside there, but yes,
that's
a beautiful line. And now you can look up that quote too. Lots to look up.
I love the violin. I'm excited about that. Okay, if you could invite any author or literary character to dinner, who would it be? And let's say you can have 3 to 4 people or characters, authors, writers, or characters. You can cheat if you want to. And what would you serve?
Okay, so I would invite Tolkien and C.S. Lewis because I want a taste of the Inklings, you know, debate. I want to know what it would be like to have a pint with them. And so I would love to have them there. And then I thought it would be really cool since we can invite characters and authors to invite both Louisa May Alcott and Joe March. So because, you know, Joe March was sort of the stand-in for Louisa in many ways, but I would love to see how different they actually are. And also they're both such lively, you know, people. I'm sure that they would have plenty to talk about with Tolkien and Lewis and about the arts and theology and everything else. So that would be my lively dinner table.
Oh, that sounds so fun. I love to hear what people say. It's always fun.
It's a good question.
Mine would include, I'm not going to say all of it because I think I've said it before, but I we had this question one time at like a it wasn't a book club. It was like a creative group I was at. And we were going around saying who we would invite. And I was like, I listed like Dorothy Sayers and Flannery O'Connor. And I'm like, and Dolly Parton, Jane Austen.
Oh, I'd love to have Dolly there. You know that she would be great. She would. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And I mean, there are people who came to mind that I like love. Yeah. Like anybody who listens to my podcast knows I love like Sylvia Plath. But I don't know if I want her at dinner. You know, I don't know. Like, I think she was a little heavy. She was a little kind of intense. And, you know, God bless Sylvia. But like, I probably wouldn't invite her to dinner. So there are plenty of people like that where I admire them, but I don't know if I want a dinner companion. But this group here, not only do I admire them, but I think that they would be very interesting to have dinner with.
They would be. Yeah, it'd be interesting, like the conversation between all of them, like how are the Inklings going to do with a lady in the midst? So it's like,
right. You know, and Louisa was, you know, part of sort of the sort of progressive artistic movement of her day. And I'd love to hear, you know, her spar with C.S. Lewis. And yeah, I don't know. I think it'd be great. So
it would be great fun. If only.
Yeah, if only.
Okay. Finally, do you have any book recommendations to share?
Yes. So I was looking through. So one of them, I have two. One of them sort of a practical recommendation, which is if you're looking, you know, this has been about motherhood. I read parenting books. That's one of the things I spend time doing. And one that I really liked was called Hunt, Gather, Parent by Micheline Duclife. I might not have pronounced her name right. But it's especially really great for toddlers because she sort of goes around to all these different societies, different cultures, and sees how they raise toddlers. And I think that anybody who has a toddler knows that a lot of the frustrations are because of this sort of burgeoning independence and not necessarily the physical or mental capacity to reach that independence yet. But a lot of other cultures do a much better job of incorporating them into sort of the work and life of the family. And that's sort of like what we were talking about earlier about sort of just inviting our kids into things. And that sort of eases a lot of the frustration, you know? So it's like, if you want to be part of, you know, if you're cleaning the house, give them a little mop, you know, and like, they'll probably make a mess. So it's like, you got to just like let go of that sort of perfectionism and just sort of embrace it. But I really enjoy parenting books also that sort of show that there are many ways to do things and that you can kind of pick the ones that align with your values. So yeah, I thought that was a good survey. So that's Hunt, Gather, Parent.
I'm definitely going to be looking that up.
It's a good read. I'll probably reread it again soon. And then another one is, I'm sure a lot of people have read this at this point, but I recommend it a lot, which is Piranesi by Susanna Clarke. Have you read it, Beth?
I haven't. And I know that I messaged you after you did a podcast episode about it. And I was like, I really want to read it. It's on my list.
Yeah.
And I haven't yet. And I want to. My friend Sophie Burkhart, who has a podcast called Beneath the Willow Tree, she is fantastic for book recommendations. Mm-hmm. And she loved that book.
It takes like a minute to get into. Like, it's a short book, like when you pick it up, and then you'll open it and you'll immediately read the first page and you'll have no idea what's being talked about. It'll be like, you know, the room was there, waves were lapping and they were in the quarter, you know, so you just got to give it a minute and just like keep reading and be okay with being confused, but it'll click quickly. And it's beautiful. There are Narnia references that you'll pick up on. There are many, many literary references, but it's a beautiful, beautiful book about sort of the nature of what it means to be human. And I mean, the story is, it's impossible really to talk about without giving anything away except what you would read on the back cover. So I'll just say that it's about sort of a very isolated individual who has found a lot of meaning in the creation around him and has a very, very beautiful worldview that is authentic in a lot of ways. But then we sort of see that deep loneliness too, and what we need from other people to sort of realize the full beauty of that creation. So it's one of those books that you finish and you could just talk about it from 800 different angles. So highly recommend.
Oh, that's amazing. I have it on audio, but I don't know if I should listen to it or should I try to get a physical copy?
I think you should read it.
Okay, that's what I thought.
I would be confused like if I turned on the audio, like maybe as a reread, but for me at least, with sort of, it's a totally different world you're immersed in initially, and you have to pick up on a lot of clues as you go along. And I could see that kind of like skipping over in the audio version.
Okay, that's good. I'm so glad you said that, because I was almost didn't say anything, but I'm glad I did, because I might just look for a copy and just see if I can find one and just go ahead and buy it. Because I'd gotten it from the library when, like, after your podcast originally, and then it was like, ran out of time and had to return it. Of course, there's a hold. There's so many holds on it that it was going to take a while. So yeah, I'm going to hunt down a copy. All right, Katie, I have enjoyed this conversation so much. We go, can you share where people can find you?
So the best place is just to go to bornofwonder.com, and you can go to the contact me page and email me anytime. People email me a lot, you know, and I, you know, with the time that I have, but I do really enjoy sort of striking up email correspondence and learning from people who share my interests or introduce me to new ones. So please do feel free to email me. I do have an Instagram at Born of Wonder. I'm sort of very sporadically on there. I'm on there like once every 2 months. That's sort of my new thing. But, you know, there are a lot of posts on there, reference episodes and things like that. But the website is probably the better way to go.
I don't know if I've told you this or not, but I love how you are handling social media right now. I just have to pick your brain about it some other time, because I admire it so much that you take that break, because I am not on Instagram a lot posting, but I will scroll on there. But I saw when you like originally said you were taking a break, and then when you've taken breaks at other times, and I just think that's just so healthy. It's just so healthy.
And I do recommend it for the reading life too. I mean, I do notice a definite difference in my attention span when I'm online and when I'm not. I think it's not our fault, you know. I mean, it's the way that they're programmed, and it's you know, maybe there are people who are better at setting parameters than I am, but I find when I have the apps available, I pick it up, I scroll, and you know, I always give up social media for Lent. And then this Lent, I was like, you know, like there's nothing compelling you to be, you know, you don't have to be on it. And I think especially now, I think a lot of people aren't on as much. So I can just tell you that you won't miss out on things. Your friends will still be your friends, and life goes on.
Well, I just love that, Katie. I admire it so much. And it's just inspired me, because I know that there was a little bit of a time, our cabin doesn't have internet. So a lot of times we can't, it's very difficult to get online.
I love that.
When we're at the cabin. It's wonderful. But we were there a couple of weekends ago for our anniversary, and I was like, I'm not going on it all. Just not. I don't need to. And it was so nice. And I got so much read. I started Dr. Zhivago, which was recommended at a bookstore by a woman. The woman who owns the bookstore in this tiny town, mountain town, because we both had read The Life You Save, Maybe Your Own, and Thomas Merton loved this book. So it was interesting. I just got to sit down and read it, and it was just so peaceful, and it was what I needed. So I love that. It's that forcing me to get away when I can't practice the self-control that I need to. Oh, well, thank you again so much, Katie. And her podcast is such a delight. I love your older podcast, too. I tell people about it all the time on Fairy Stories. So Born of Wonder and on Fairy Stories are both so good. And you are in for such a treat when you listen to Katie. So thank you so much, Katie.
Thank you, Beth. This is really, really just a delight to chat with you as always.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's all for this week. I'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode. In the meantime, if you'd like to connect, you can find me sometimes on Instagram at WellReadBeth and at the Well Read Life Facebook group. Happy reading. Until next time.